Hello, everyone. This is the Dream It Alive show. I'm your host, Ash Kumra, co-founder of DreamItAlive.com. We are a global community that guides you to create your dream life with scientifically proven visualization tools, dream boards, and helpful personal development content. Come take the next step. Why not become the best version of you? It's free to join at DreamItAlive.com. So today's guest is someone who's done a lot for the music industry, and why I wanted him on the show is because he is, I think, taking the music scene to a whole new level. Johnny Podell is one of the most legendary behind-the-scenes figures in rock and roll history. I mean, this guy has worked with some of the most amazing acts of our time, including the Allman Brothers Band, Alice Cooper, George Harrison, John Lennon, Blondie, Lou Reed, Ross Stewart, Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, and many, many more. He's actually done some groundbreaking tours in his time. He actually is single-handedly credited for changing the way rock shows have been booked, which we'll get to in a bit as well. But why I found him extraordinary specifically for the Dream It Alive show is because after all of that glitz and glory and taking music to a whole new level, his current journey, which is what he's doing right now, is all about what I call really growing the conscious music revolution by connecting existing spiritual practices with Kabbalah and transcendental meditation to the teaching as a guide that's channeled by Paul Selig. He's actually used all this influence to create the Podell Agency. And their whole mission is to help raise collective visibility and impact and furthering the planet's already existing movement towards spiritual evolution and growth. So, Johnny, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Hey, it's an honor to have you here, sir. It's a pleasure. And you've done so much for the music industry. So many of the names that you represented have personally impacted my own upbringing. So it's cool to talk to someone like yourself. Johnny, I'm curious. Tell us about your, the beginning of this. I would like to kind of know about your journey. Like, how did you get involved in the music industry? And what was it like when it was in the heydays when you were active in the, before the Podell Agency?
Well, I got into it, if I was unconscious now, I would say, quite by accident. Consciously, I guess there was probably a reason for me getting into it. On the surface, it didn't appear that way. I had no greater love for music than anybody my age. I had no musical background. I wasn't musically inclined. I liked to play my music. And one day I was reading, always like looking at women's fashion magazines, always had a fascination with that, beautiful women in beautiful clothes as a kid. And I had gone through school and grad school and I had started law school. I mean, I just didn't know what I wanted to do, so I kept going to school. And then I saw a profile. There were these three profiles, like an homage to men in what's considered women's magazines. And I read the first profile. I just saw the guy, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. To be honest, it was pretty shallow. I didn't even read it first. I grew up, my father was pretty what they would call square and conservative, 9 to 5, buttoned up. I looked up to my dad and loved my dad, but didn't want to be that person. So I see the first picture on this page in, let's call it Vogue magazine, this homage to men, and it was called Men on the Move, and the guy didn't wear a tie, and I went, nice. And he had long hair, and I went, nice. And he was in a limousine, and I go, damn, that's what I want to do. And the way I tell the story, had that guy been a proctologist, you'd be calling me Dr. Podell. But when I read further into it, it turned out he was a music entrepreneur and a manager and a publisher. And I said, looks good. So really, although I would like to wow you with a great story of inspiration, it was that simple. It was that guy looked like the anti-dad, and it looked like a cool thing to do and a good way to meet girls. And so that was
I was just about to say that. You could have said something interesting like, hey, man, I'll be honest. I did it originally for the chicks.
Well, by the way, if you interviewed, I will tell you this because I have been around this business in and around it a long time. If you really, really get to the bottom with most rock stars, small percentage, now I don't know what that means, 10% or 25%, the minority percentage was about making music. The majority percentage was about meeting women.
Oh, wow. I
was probably no different than a lot of others.
Well, Johnny, I'm just curious. I still want to focus a little more on your earlier heydays, specifically George Harrison, John Lennon, and the whole Beatles kind of revolution, because, this whole subject, this whole interview is about conscious music and where it's heading and which what you're doing. But I know just from reading and just observing that the Beatles were somewhat involved in taking their music to a whole new level by becoming very spiritually conscious, by joining movements like the Hare Krishna movement. I mean, what was the conscious music scene like back then? Like, what was compelling groups like the Beatles and other acts to like look elsewhere besides the traditional society?
You know what? I don't really know. I was at the time, to be honest, I was pretty unconscious. I hadn't yet woken. And, I had begun to do my share of drugs, and I certainly wasn't a student of spiritual matters. It's now more in retrospect that I go, wow, I represented George Harrison. Listen to those lyrics. So it's interesting that I'm really, I don't want to say I'm asking the same questions you are now, but over these last few years, the last 3 years specifically since I woke up, that's all I play. And not because he was my client, just because I go, holy crap, listen to that. And of course, my favorite song, and which will be really at some point, the music or spirit of John Lennon's Imagine, is really the music that is in my head when I talk about consciousness as the new rock and roll. It's John Lennon's Imagine and all of George Harrison's solo work as he was preparing, I think they called it then, to go to the other side. What drove them, I don't know. I think at the time it was a perfect storm of events. There was the war in Vietnam, and there was civil rights, and there was, Kent State, Ford dead in Ohio. There was drugs that were supposedly non-addictive. There was all of a sudden birth control, so sex was freer. Drug use was wild. And the mix of all that, the peaceniks versus, the warmongers, it was a perfect storm of event, which they call the dawning of the age of Aquarius. And out of that, a lot of people got financially successful and spoke to masses. Many took the path of drugs as a doorway. Many, like myself, eventually got trapped in it and succumbed to it. Many, like George Harrison, used it, I guess, as a passageway looking for the light, because it seems, and from everything I've read and I study, that the one thing man has in common is their desire for spiritual light. It's not everybody is yet conscious enough to know that what they're searching for is spiritual light. So many of us think it's about money, it's about love affair, it's about home, it's about trips, it's about this, it's about that. But the bottom line is we're all looking for life, for spiritual light. Everybody wants the same: fulfillment, peace, contentment, joy, enlightenment. It's really everybody really at the end of the day has that in common. But it gets blinded. George was clearly ahead of his time, so he had the money and he had the drugs that maybe opened him up to some new things. The money and success, so much success you start to go, well, what else is there? I wasn't personally friends with him. He was a client. And so I can't tell you that the personal stories, he was a client that was kept. Many of my clients I had personal relationships with, And there was some, and I wish he hadn't been one, that kind of was kept away by the inner circle, meaning so he was the music and I was the business, but we didn't have that personal relationship. So everything I'm telling you about is really my observation in looking back. You know, so you and I are both at the same place, except I had the joy and privilege of working with him, and I also get to brag about it.
Yeah, no doubt. That's awesome. you know, I have a question about, before I dive into, you know, how you became, quote unquote, conscious, getting out of unconsciousness, I want to know if you can help me understand a common thing that I'm seeing and I've heard from many people. Why do some people feel that they need to take substances or do things that are out of body to reach spiritual enlightenment or consciousness?
Why do they think?
Yeah, why do they think that? Because at the end of the day, consciousness is about, you know, finding you and being true to you. But, you know, haven't you encountered people, like some of the names that you just mentioned, you said that they had to take drugs and they did certain things to help them, to help at least for them to think that, oh, I'm on this spiritual journey, I need to take substances. Why do you think they thought that?
Well, they were looking to expand their mind. They were looking to expand their mind, and this was the shortcut.
The shortcut, guy.
It was a great shortcut. I mean, you know, LSD. Now it's ayahuasca. Basically the same thing. Expand your mind and risk whatever risks there are. And it is true that, if you don't get caught up in the high of it all, of that part of it, I think these things are mind-expanding. Let me see, though, if I can really get to your point. Why they do it and why some people try to do it naturally, I don't know. Maybe there was more information, less information available to any one person at any one point. And clearly, these people that you're fascinated with, this era of rock and roll music and drugs and a search for God, you know, again, because of the perfect storm, drugs were so prominent in that society that, you know, I mean, I'm guessing, I don't know who the first people were that said, wow, I had an experience last night. I think I saw God. And maybe told a friend, and the friend said, oh, yeah, what were you taking? And he said, whatever, XYZ potion. He goes, wow. You know, but wait, and didn't the Native Americans do that? Wow, and go back to their lineage, go, wait, they all took mushrooms and peyote and mescaline and sat on a mountaintop for days and nights searching for God. I mean, I guess since the world was created, I guess everybody has been looking for the creator and the story of creation. Maybe that's built in us. You know, I want to preface, and I should have prefaced the interview by saying, let me throw in a disclaimer. I'm flattered that you're asking me these questions. I'll do the best I can. But I'm way more of a student than I am of a teacher. So a lot of times your questions are great questions. I don't have the answers. I can just tell you about where I am on my journey trying to figure it out as well. I can say one thing for sure. It is possible, and I don't think this is groundbreaking, but this is a definite. I have found it definitely that you can reach as high a plane and higher than you can with any drugs, with any high. And you're talking to somebody that has spent his life majoring in the subject of being high. Obviously, it's not part of my program anymore. But, I mean, I know what it's like to be high, and I know what it's like to look for God while high. And since my spiritual awakening almost 3 years ago, I've been there, and nothing's in me. So of the two, I prefer to do it on my own because I'm assuming that's the way it was intended. But, you know, for whatever it takes. But you asked a good question before. Let me circle back.
Sure.
The first time I ever heard of an out-of-body experience, I don't know if you mentioned it, but I also managed Lou Reed.
Yep.
And Lou Reed, like me, was a serious drug user, abuser. I don't think I'm doing a discredit to him. I think it's common knowledge, and I think he's owned it before he passed. And I hadn't even heard of an out-of-body experience. I kept thinking about, Louie, you shouldn't keep using your specific drug. You're losing it. What do you mean out-of-body? And he's describing to me, I'm out of my body, looking down on my body. So that was a long time ago, and it's only, I guess I stored that, and it's only beginning to make sense now. And I still don't have all the answers. My personal understanding is that we are self-contained. We are a divine self. God's not up in the clouds, and God's not anywhere. It's in us. We are God. We are our divine self. And the consciousness movement that I advocate is welcoming that, accepting that, and being aware that we were all created with the peace of the Creator. And it's in us, and we don't really need to be out. We don't need to look out, I think. If the trip takes us out, then maybe that's where we're supposed to be, out of body, in the dream state. Like I said, I'm still at the early stages, but I know the journey for me is looking within. And on occasion, I can tell you it has taken me out of body, but it wasn't what I looked for. You want to hear an interesting story?
Please.
When I first started, my whole thing started with meditation 2 years and 10 months ago. Very simple, learned how to meditate. And it was at a tough time in my life. I had relapsed after years of sobriety. I had had a surgery, and the pain pills were a slippery slope, and I relapsed and wound up in a rehab, you know, in a vulnerable state. You don't go into any of these places flying on the wings of victory. It wasn't a highlight, but it certainly became one. And the third day, a volunteer taught us to meditate, and my life changed forever. And wait, I lost my thought. Oh, so I got out, and I started meditating, and I think you want to know more about other spiritual practices. I'll get into that later. But just let me tell you, so it's in the early days of me, you know, waking up and absorbing everything. And I would see my optician, the guy that, you know, makes the lenses for my glasses, and I'd go there to get them fixed, and we'd start to talk, and he'd tell me about meditation. He was an Indian man that had meditated twice a day for his entire life, since he's 4, and his son now meditates with him. And I'm fascinated, you know, it's like, oh my God. It would be like a new kid playing guitar, and he gets to meet Jimmy Page or, you know, Robert Johnson or Jimi Hendrix, you know what I mean? I'm sitting there going, my mouth's open, tell me more. And one day he goes, do you want to know what the best time to meditate is? And as a drug addict, recovering drug, we like all words that end with est, biggest, greatest, juiciest. We want more. Whatever it is, we want more. So I go, oh, yeah, I want more. Yeah, what's the best time? So he says 4:30 in the morning. So I go, really, what's that about? And he explains something about that's when all the energy lines up. I can't do justice to the explanation. He says, usually when you'll see pictures of monks going for the morning meditation, it's about that time. I go, wow. So two very interesting things happens. So one day I get up, middle of the night, if you don't mind, to pee, as people do sometimes. And as people do, your eyes have closed, and I'm going, ugh. Now, oh my God, 4:30, I got to get up in 4 hours. And as I get back in bed, I go, oop, the light bulb went off. Wow, it's 4:30. Meditation. I was too tired to go into the living room and sit in the spot, and I just laid down and listened to what happened. Instantaneously, laying back on my pillow, I saw, you know those fireworks, the ones that are like a cascade? They cascade up and around. You get it? They go straight up and then around to the right and left.
Yeah.
So I saw a burst of that, followed by a bigger burst, up more and around more. And in the third shot of that cascading fireworks, I was in it and above me. Go figure. I guess that's what they call an out-of-body experience. I didn't even know it hit me. And I'll tell you one more interesting story, and then I don't want to hijack your interview. Then, one day also, I woke up. I'm sure you have an iPhone. And did you ever wake up in the middle of the night because the phone lights up?
Yep.
Right. So I wake up one day, and I go, wait, who's calling? And then I realize nobody's calling. Do you know that's the time of day when Apple uploads everything? Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
And Steve Jobs studied supposedly in India for 11 years. Anyway, I found that all fascinating.
That is fascinating. Well, going to what you were talking about, how you discovered meditation almost 2.5 to 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Tell us about that point of when, you know, you decided, okay, I'm going to give up this lifestyle and or change my lifestyle, let's just say, and look to these other mediums such as meditation and things of that sort. Like, tell us about that time.
It just happened. I hadn't really, it had been many years since I was living the drug addict's life. So in other words, it wasn't that, oh my God, now I'm changing my life. No, I had gotten clean many years before and had relapsed once or twice. And this time was as a result of a mandatory surgery and mandatory pain medication. I actually tried to do it without it. So it wasn't, oh, I'm changing the rock and roll lifestyle. And I don't think I made a conscious decision to do it. I right by the third day of meditating, something happened to me. And in a guided meditation, the guy had said to me in the third part, go to a place you love. And it's a great story, but we don't have that much time. And I went to the beach I love, and I sat by the water's edge. The perfect time of day I like, when it's not too hot, not too cold, not too crowded. And a woman came out of the water very dramatically, slowly walked out, and eventually, you know, I could see she was tall and had long blonde hair, and but it wasn't provocative or anything. And the woman came and sat down next to me on the water's edge, back on her elbows like I did. And we didn't speak, and we left the beach. And the second part of the meditation, we were in my room later that night. And again, not provocatively, as I remember, I was on the covers, on top of the covers, looking up. I guess it was bedtime. The woman was to my left on her tummy. We still hadn't said a word. And with her left hand, she reached over, closed my eyes, shut my eyes, put her hand on my heart, and said, all is well. Well, I had been struck. I opened my eyes. And I couldn't wait to talk, but there were two others in the meditation class. And the minute they opened, I said, nobody speak. I just met my soulmate. Anyway, that was, I guess, what you call a knowing. You know, they say when you know, you know. I knew that I had met that person, and I would wait no matter how long. And by the way, long story short of that, it took about a year later. I think it was about a year and 3 months later, and I met this person, and she became my partner and recently my wife. But anyway, that moment of knowing something affected me greatly. And then in rapid succession, right after that, I got three messages, one from a movie, and the message I was watching, and the message said, God's given you this life. Now it's time to pay it back with interest. And I went, wow, this amazing life I've led, time to pay back. And then 2 weeks later, I heard a quote from my lifetime idol, Muhammad Ali. And that quote said, service to others is our rent for being on the planet. And then 2 weeks later, watching Piers Morgan interview the highest paid actor of that year, trying to get him to own up to what he earned, and the guy was a little flustered, and he said, I'm not going to comment, but what I will tell you, to whom much is given, much is required. So two things happened almost within 30 days. I learned how to meditate. I met what I thought was my soulmate. I now understand soulmate's a different definition of the, you know, falling in love that we think. It's a deeper thing. And I also decided to change my life to a life of service, and that the rest of my life would be to serve. And so one thing led to another. The service thing definitely was a commitment. Right then and there, I knew this is why I had been saved from the horrible death that many people like me had suffered. And I took it very, very seriously, and I still do. Happy to talk about that later. The meditation piece, it just felt good. It just felt good starting with that moment. It just felt good. I got it. Take a time out. Slow down. You know, if the purpose of life, as they explain in Kabbalah, is to transform from a reactive being, which is what we all are, to a proactive being, just take time out. You don't need that experience of that white light, out-of-body moment I had every time. Take a time out. Take a time out to realize there's way more to us than where I live, what I'm wearing, what I eat, who I'm speaking to on the phone, who I'm living with in the material world. And that's where George Harrison came in. He knew he was a spiritual being living trapped in a physical body. No, he was a spiritual being trapped in a physical body living in the material world. But he knew, like a lot of Native Americans knew, that it was all in preparation for the other side. So all of these things, by the way, started, like, my head was exploding. Actually, I can't explain to you. I started to write my memoir, and I would end every session with this guy. Every 4 hours, it would be an intense 4 hours a day for 3 months. And at the end of everything, I said, oh, my God, I just wish there were more hours. I don't want to go to sleep. I was waking up and finding things, and it was the first time in my life that I'd been alone. I've always been a guy in a relationship. I was married once. I have 2 kids, beautiful kids, Brittany and Cassie. I have 2 grandchildren. And I've always been in relationships ever since I got divorced 30 years ago. This year was the most amazing year of my life. It was me learning about my divine self. I've never been as happy, excited, fun, sexy. It was sex, drugs, and rock and roll without the drugs. It was like sex, God. Oh, I never thought about it like that. It was really sex, God, and rock and roll. And wow. I still think this is all pretty sexy. And my purpose in life is to serve and to bring consciousness to more people and make it fun, sexy, and rock and roll. Why does it have to be boring? And why does meditation have to be on your to-do list? You know, I want to make this as much fun as, you know, going to whatever concert you like. Rolling Stones, Lady Gaga, who knows?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I love that. And thank you for sharing that part of your journey. You know, I'm just curious because you talked about the being a servant in consciousness. I mean, one of the things that, you know, from your bio and things that the subject's about this interview is about the whole taking music to a whole new level. And, you know, you clearly are a master of knowing what is good music and what's not good music, or at least an expert, or you've seen a lot of it. Talk us about what you're currently doing with the music industry and why and what excites you about it.
Well, I am still actively a music agent. I have been spending more time in the consciousness mission of my company,
yep,
which we started 9 months ago. And I'm also, like I said before, I don't know about the answers. My hunch, my belief, and my dedication is that within the next few years, I had said by the Olympics 2016, still possible, but I would say within the next few years that consciousness would become, you know, I had said in another, I had given a speech recently, and I kind of walked everybody through my life, and I realized that starting with the dawning of the age of Aquarius, that looking back now to a lot of my peers, rock and roll was, what do they call it, the soundtrack of all of our lives, for most of us, or a lot of us. And certainly when I grew up, it was a soundtrack of my lives. And then for the next generation, not sure how old you are, but let's say for my children's generation, technology is the soundtrack of their lives. I think if you ask most people, if they had to choose, nobody would want to. Their music or their iPhone, I believe they would take the phone.
Yeah.
And I think going forward, the next step is consciousness. And that's why I say consciousness is the new rock and roll. There was rock and roll, technology, and now it's merging. And I believe, I've seen it, I feel it, and I know it, that it won't, and I will make a prediction, it won't be 4 years before you'll be in a town in Brazil or a town in Switzerland or a town in Indonesia or China, and you'll hear a kid say to another kid, "Oh, my God, did you see who's coming March 21st? And it's not going to be any of the rock and roll names. It's going to be a consciousness event. And that will be the new language. And that will be what turns people on. And that will be what gives people orgasms. And that will be what people get excited about, the same way people have been for 50 years so excited about the Rolling Stones and others like them." And I believe it and see it and, of course, intend to be a big part of it. But I think, personally, it's happening. I don't think, you know, none of us are indispensable. I think I'm a messenger, and I think I'm guessing right now, the way I'm seeing it, and you're obviously seeing it, that maybe this is my divine purpose and why I was served to merge the two. So, but that's okay, that's about me. But what's happening without me every day, my computer's being flooded by more conscious music, by more people reaching out with music, and I'm trying desperately, me and my team, to screen it all, to, like, you know, it's hard, it's some task to try to give everything a listen and to try to experience as much as possible. But I do believe that the next, you know, because you describe, okay, in my generation it was rock and roll, right? Then my kids' generation, they didn't want their parents rock and roll, right? So they chose hip hop. And now the next generation doesn't want hip hop, they want their own hip-hop, and that's called EDM. And everybody always, every generation always wants their own. I think the net, and then, you know, there was grunge, and there were all the various, and blues, and all the different genres that you could, I'd find channels for on Sirius Radio. I believe the next big thing, the number one thing in terms of music, will be whatever you want to call it, conscious music, spiritual
music.
Okay,
well, let's, I want to dive into that a little further. Who are some music artists right now that you think are paving the way for this conscious music revolution that's happening right now?
Nobody that's spun me out yet.
Okay.
Nobody that's spun me out. But in, I don't want to do a disservice. I'm sure there is so much, but I've been so absorbed in my own spiritual awakening and growth that it's only really now that I'm starting to look at the music part. Like, I, for the first 2 years, I kind of put the music on hold other than to service my own clients because I owed them loyalty as they've given me loyalty over the years. I've had some of these clients 40 years. So it's only everybody else like you saw the inevitable. Well, Johnny's now conscious. Of course he's going to bring his awakening to rock and roll. I was just involved in the awakening. It's only now that I'm hearing you and others say, "No, Johnny, are you kidding? You are the one," that I'm starting to. So I haven't really, I'd have to think about it. But I think I do think about it. There's nobody that comes to mind. But like I said, a disclaimer, I'm sure you could give me 10 examples. I'm looking for the next ones.
Got it.
The ones that exist, and you're talking about, I'm sure, the marquee names. I think, obviously, there are people that, you know, making music that are very spiritual and very awake. Maybe right now, because I'm on the spot, none come to mind.
Okay, no problem. Well, my last
We can set up another interview in a few months, and I'll give you a list.
Done. I'll take you up on that. My next question is, my final question for this interview is, if you could guide someone who is curious to become more conscious, they might have been in a state of mind that you were in at a time of your life, or they might have been in a state of mind that some unconscious people we might know in our lives were at. And if you could tell them some of the benefits of being mindful, meditation, or conscious living, what would you tell them?
First, more peace. Meditation. Meditation. I think you asked two questions, I'm not sure, but I would recommend to anybody how to begin this journey. They wanted to listen to this interview and go, okay, where do I begin? Where I began. Meditation. It opens up a whole other world. It made me aware. It first brought other people, conscious people, to me, other meditative people to me, other people with so much to teach towards me. Every day, I don't know where they came from, just by opening up my mind, by meditation, not drugs. And I'm not saying don't use drugs, but I'm saying for me, it came just, I opened up. All of a sudden, I met a whole new breed of people that were teaching me, and we were exploring together. My journey went, you know, to TM, Transcendental Meditation, twice a day, and Kabbalah, and, you know, the teachings of the guides is channeled by Paul Selig in his series of books, one of which is called I Am the Word. But I would say to the benefits of consciousness is, first of all, to find my divine self. I'm more than what I wear and what I do for a living. And what I eat and where I live. I don't know if it's a small question with a big answer or a big question with a small answer. On a day-to-day practical level, I found my relationships with the significant people in my life all improved. I became less reactive. I realized that I didn't have to answer your email the minute you sent it. Meditation taught me to pause, you know. Maybe I'll answer you tomorrow. And the answers were always better, more mindful, more conscious, less reactive. That was my first big benefit. My relationship with my daughter, so improved, just by me taking, you know, in my case, two timeouts a day. I like to call it an adult timeout. You know how you tell your kids, go to your room, take a timeout. Yep. Same thing. The child within us needs a timeout too. So I would say, peace, less reactivity, eventually more productivity, and the big payoff is to realize that and to awaken what they call the Christ within us all, and it's not Jesus Christ, the divine self in us that every one of us had, including the serial killers, to awaken that divine self, and that's really where the bliss is. And that's where the light is. It's in us. And you explore it through consciousness, not unconscious, walking through the street, just going through emotions. Hey, Johnny, got to go to work. Hey, I got this interview at 5. Hey, I'm meeting my friends for dinner at 7. Being conscious. Why are we doing everything we do? I guess that's what I'd have to say on the subject.
That was beautiful. I mean, I think that answer is as eloquent as I could have asked for. Truly, Johnny, thank you so much for doing this interview. And more importantly, thank you for helping the world. It's very rare to meet someone who has been through such different life cycles of our society as you have been, and to now circle it back to serve and help the world. It's so cool to see that. And I can't wait to see the awesome success you're going to have this year and beyond, and the further inspiration you're going to have for many others.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope somebody got something out of it, and follow what we're doing at Podell Agency website or on Facebook, and we'll keep passing it on.
All right, have a good day.
Thank you.